I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match.
Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for your dedication to liberty first, to education, to the real beginning of the new revolution. The real beginning of the new revolution always begins with education. That's how it began in 1761. That's how it continued through the committees of correspondence and the Sons of Liberty. And that's how we became independent, not just from Great Britain, but from kings forever. But here we are, once again, suffering from colossal ignorance that is making us slaves all over again. Samuel Adams wrote to James Warren in 1775, "For no people will tamely surrender their liberties, nor can easily be subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. On the contrary, when people are universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink under their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders." We have become ignorant. Our education system has been co-opted by the Marxists since about 1850, mid-1850s. And we have been suffering from revision of history and the re-education of the people to the destruction of liberty for quite some time now. We have become ignorant. Our greatest threat is not ISIS. Our greatest threat is ignorance. John Philbert Curran said at the gubernatorial debate in Dublin, Ireland in 1790, "It is the common fate of the indolent to see their rights become prey to the active. The condition upon which God hath given liberty to man is eternal vigilance, which condition, if he breaks servitude, is at once the consequence of his crime and the punishment of his guilt." We are guilty. We are guilty. We are guilty of being indolent about our liberty. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. It's always been that way. But because we have become ignorant through our government-created education system, government-manipulated education system, we have become guilty, and we are watching the active prey on our rights. But Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. We are still powerful. We are still the ones that hold all the power of consent, which is also the power to not consent. That's where our power lies, in this power to consent and not to consent. But Jefferson continues and says, "But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such governments and to provide new guards for their future security." We are in control. We are the powerful ones, and we are in control. But we must get educated. We must become vigilant. We must take back our power. We must resume control. We must exercise our rights. And in order to do that, we must be educated. Educated on the right things, not the wrong things. See, that's the whole problem. We have allowed our government manipulated, our government engineered educational system to educate us on wrong things. We're graduating people all over this country who know a whole lot of wrong things, and then they go around and repeat them as if they are true. And it's time to take back our schools. Now, people are doing that all over the country. We have this anti-Common Core movement. I am very proud of the anti-Common Core movement. I wish that it was an anti-federal government education movement, but I understand that we have to take baby steps. It's just too much for us in our current state of affairs to understand and kick out federal funding. It's not so much federal government control that we are willing to accept as the funding that brings that control. But can you imagine? Can you imagine if we actually had an education system dedicated to teaching right things? We wouldn't be in this situation. We wouldn't be battling Common Core unless it was at the state level. We would be battling tyrannical government at the state level and not wasting all our time battling federal tyranny. Because, you know, our framers knew that it was going to be very, very difficult to battle federal tyranny, which is why they vested the majority of the power in the states. I received a question the other day about Common Core, and the question that was presented to me was, I'm in the middle of a debate with someone about Common Core. She's a big fan of Common Core, and she claims that the federal government does have the authority to be involved in education because the General Welfare Clause gives the federal government the power, the interest of the general welfare of the union, and because of the general welfare of the union, they have a vested interest in education, because education is a benefit to the general welfare of the union. And because of that, then they also have the authority, the power, to be involved in education. Education affects the general welfare, therefore the general welfare clause gives the federal government the power to be involved in our education. And the question that came to me was, Chrisanne, how would you respond to this? I would respond to this with not simply an opinion or a remark, but with education. You see, according to the father of the Constitution, the powers delegated to the central government are few and defined, and those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. James Madison wrote that in Federalist 45. Madison also explained that those powers are, quote, reserved to external objects of, quote, war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. He also stated that the central government's power to tax is intended to be limited to those four powers. That's also, you can also find that in Federalist Paper 45. Now, Madison clarified the meaning of the often abused clauses in 1792 during the cod fishery bill debate. I mean, the general welfare clause, the tax and spending clause, the necessary proper clause, and the commerce clauses. Specifically, those clauses were not powers of their own, but descriptions of the purposes of those limited and enumerated powers that I've already mentioned to you: war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. The General Welfare Clause, Madison explains, was added to describe the purpose of the limited powers being delegated to the central government. Like, the central government could use those powers for the general welfare of the Union rather than for the benefit of one state over the other. The debate in 1792 over these cod fishery subsidies makes it crystal clear. This is not a blanket power to do anything you can think of to promote the so-called general welfare. It is, in fact, a limitation to direct that the power be wielded equitably. In this debate, Madison also warns of the consequences of reinterpreting this clause as a general boilerplate power rather than the description of the intent that the limited powers be used to the general benefit of the entire Union and an equitable distribution of benefit. He said, quote, "For if the clause in question really authorizes Congress to do whatever they think fit, provided it be for the general welfare, of which they are to judge, and judge alone, and money can be applied to it, Congress must have power to create and support a judiciary establishment, with a jurisdiction extending to all favorable cases, in their opinion, to the general welfare, in the same manner as they have the power to pass laws, and aptly money providing in any other way for the general welfare." He says if Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare, and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing like manner schools, curriculum throughout the Union. And there you have it, James Madison warning us that education is not a job of the central government, and even more so, should never be. And the General Welfare Clause is not a power that grants that to them. General Welfare says, you gotta stay out.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So James Madison makes it very clear in 1792 that education is not the business of the central government. And he even uses the example of those who today would say otherwise. James Madison warns of the consequences of interpreting the General Welfare Clause as a boilerplate power. James Madison gets right to the point. You can't get any clearer than this. He says, "For if the General Welfare Clause really authorizes Congress to do whatever they think, provided it be for the general welfare, of which they are to judge, then money can be applied to it. Congress must have, then, the power to create and support judiciary establishment with a jurisdiction extending to all cases favorable in their opinion, and to the general welfare in the same manner as they have power to pass laws, and apply money providing in any other way for the general welfare." Can you imagine? Madison is speaking in hyperbole here to make a point. He's saying, look, what you're going to get here, if you allow the Congress to apply the General Welfare Clause as a power rather than as a purpose of that power, you're going to have Congress creating courts throughout the country that will stick their noses in everybody's business because it'll be a matter of general welfare. Oh my goodness, how ridiculous would that be? If Congress, he says, can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare, he's warning us, and are the sole supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take care of religion into their own hands. Oh, 501c3s, perhaps. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of their public treasuries with federal funding. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools and curriculum, perhaps, throughout the Union. They may assume the provision for the poor. Oh, you mean general welfare doesn't mean welfare? They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads, like the Department of Transportation. In short, everything, Madison says, I'm still quoting from Madison now, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. For every object I have mentioned would admit of the application of money and might be called, if Congress so pleased, provisions for the general welfare. You must recognize in this discussion that Madison is remarking that it is an obvious abuse of power for the central government to assume the role of education, regulation of religion, public welfare, the Department of Transportation. It is outside the power of the federal government and an obvious abuse of power for the federal government to be involved with our local law enforcement. He is speaking to his colleagues in extremes to show his point that interpreting the clauses in this way would result in an unlimited central government, a notion that would be highly offensive to the men involved in this debate. The idea that the central government would have something to do with the education of your children would have been highly offensive to the men in this debate. And it is therefore clear that the General Welfare Clause does not give power or permission for the federal government to involvement in schools, much less for the Federal Department of Education. And to the contrary, according to the father of the Constitution, once we have adopted this erroneous interpretation and application of the General Welfare Clause and the other clauses, and perhaps see federal involvement in our schools, we will know we have a ridiculously out-of-control federal government. Madison himself said it. Quote, I venture to declare it as my opinion that were the power of the Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundations and transmute the very nature of limited government established by the people of America. And what inferences may be drawn or what consequences ensue from such a step, it is incumbent on us all to consider. We have turned the constitutional interpretation over to our own musings, and we have transmuted into something other than a representative republic. I was born for this, and some people wouldn't like that I was different. It never really mattered how hard it would be, because she filled me with love and the strength to leave. She said,
the Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I love this explanation by James Madison because it explains so much about where we are. I venture to declare it is my opinion that were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, the reinterpretation of the General Welfare Clause, the reinterpretations of the Commerce Clause, the Tax and Spending Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clauses. He says, were Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundations and transmute the very nature of limited government established by the people of America. and what inferences might be drawn, or what consequences ensue from such a step. I'll tell you what consequences ensue from such a step. We have people like John Boehner in government who says, we must be team players and support each other. See, John Boehner doesn't realize that America is the team and not Republicans. 167 House Republicans rejected a call from the establishment GOP to allow executive amnesty's funding. And John Boehner's response? We all need to be team players and support each other to chastise the 167 solid majority who opposed him. Apparently, John Boehner doesn't realize what a team player is and what support each other means. Because that would mean that John Boehner would be with the majority then, because a team goes with the majority. How insane have we become? Well, we have transmuted who we are. We have transmuted how we operate. Because we have turned constitutional interpretation over to our own musings and the musings of people like John Boehner and the Supreme Court and Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell, we have transmuted into something other than a representative republic. In our arrogance, we have decided that the wisdom sown into our founding documents and that expressed in the profuse writings of its framers is irrelevant, outdated, and doesn't even need to be considered. Oh, you know, those dead guys and outdated documents. The fact is, and you know, Liberty First listeners, that our wisdom is tied to over 700 years of experience in history and five foundational liberty charters, not to mention the liberty philosophers and writers that our founders diligently consulted. This question is, where is such negligence leading us? What kind of government are we creating? Into what are we transmuting? Into the very thing that Madison warned us about. An unlimited government, the unlimited central government that would have been offensive to Madison and the people he was speaking to, is what we've become. And now, we have not only a federal government who does things like welfare of the people, financial support is what that really means, not general welfare. We have them in our education system. They have dictating our religion, controlling our roads in the Department of Transportation, and controlling our police, the very warning that Madison gave us. Why? Because it's about team playing with political parties and not liberty fighting. This is absolutely crazy. John Boehner and his establishment Republicans are a bunch of cowards that are prostitutes for power, only wanting their own benefit, and they're selling our children's liberty for their own profit. And here we go. What do? We have the founders of our country, of our liberty documents, screaming out what these 167 tried to do is exactly what our framers intended them to do. Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution puts the power of the purse in the hands of the House alone on purpose. And more than two-thirds of the Republicans tried to defund, as their power in delegated requires them to do, tried to defund executive overreach. You can call it amnesty, but what it boils down to is executive overreach. The executive branch stealing lawmaking power, stealing spending power from the House of Representatives and Congress as a whole. Article 1, Section 7 puts the power of the purse in the House alone and says the Senate may offer amendments. You know, this was done on purpose. It was not supposed to be a joint decision by the House and the Senate. It was in the House alone, and the Senate could make amendments, but the House didn't even have to agree to the amendments. You need to go look at the debates over this issue. Madison's notes on the debates make this very, very clear. George Mason said, "The consideration which weighed with the committee was that the first branch would be the immediate representatives of the people and the second would not. Should the latter have the power of giving away the people's money, they might soon forget the source from whence they received it. And we might soon have an aristocracy." You see, the House of Representatives are the immediate representatives of the people. And they have the power of the purse because the money comes from the people. But the Senate is not the representatives of the people. And therefore, Mason said, if the Senate is involved in our spending, the Congress will forget where the money comes from. They'll forget that it comes from the people, and they'll think it's everybody's money. It's a conglomerate money. It's a money that has no source. And then the next thing you know, we have an aristocracy. It is absolutely crazy. The warnings that they gave us are exactly what we have. We have an aristocracy. You see that with John Boehner, don't you? You don't agree with us, and therefore you must be punished. Bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments, as on other bills. But they don't have the final say. James Madison said in Federalist 58, "The House of Representatives cannot only refuse, but they alone can propose the supplies requisite for the support of the government. They, in a word, hold the power of the purse, that powerful instrument that we behold in the history of the British Constitution." He says, "This power over the purse may, in fact, be regarded as the most complete and effectual weapon with which any constitution can arm the immediate representatives of the people for obtaining a redress of every grievance and for carrying into effect every just and salutary measure." Further clarity of this intent of the men who ratified this provision that created the limits and a defined nature of our central government comes from a discussion between Alexander White and James Madison in the House of Representatives. They were both representing the state of Virginia. Mr. White says, quote, "The Constitution, having authorized the House of Representatives alone to originate money bills, places an important trust in our hands, which, as their protectors, we ought not part with. I do not mean to imply that the Senate are less to be trusted than this House, but the Constitution, no doubt for wise purposes, has given the immediate representatives of the people a control over the whole government." Did you hear that? Over the whole government. "And this particular, which for their interest they ought not let out of their hands." Rah! Do you hear that? The House of Representatives, White, a representative of the state of Virginia, says, "We have been given this enormous power, which means we have been given this enormous responsibility, and we are the protectors of the people's interests, and we ought not let that go." Now, luckily for Mr. White, the father of the Constitution is still alive and still representing the state of Virginia. So he is able to chime in on Mr. White's comments and say, "Yes, Mr. White, it does work that way, and you're absolutely right." James Madison says, I quote, the Constitution places the power in the House of originating money bills, and the principal reason why the Constitution had made this distinction was because they were chosen by the people. and supposed to be the best acquainted with their interest and ability. Remember, Madison said this power over the purse, in fact, may be regarded as the most complete and effectual weapon with which any constitution can arm the immediate representatives of the people for obtaining a redress of every grievance and for carrying into effect every just and salutary measure. The purpose of the House of Representatives having this enormous power was because they had an enormous responsibility to be a check on the whole government. An important governmental check reigns in the hands of the people to control the spending and growth of government. And every time the House fails to maintain this check, every time the House passes a continuing resolution instead of a budget, every time they fund executive action that steals power from the legislation, executive action that doesn't even exist, executive power, that vital check fails, and the House relinquishes what our framers thought to be one of the most important powers held in trust by the people. This is how it's supposed to work, and this is why John Boehner and the establishment Republicans who refuse to control this executive branch are actually traitors to our liberty and their responsibilities.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's liberty's lobbyist. Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So where does that leave us? I mean, really, this is the education that we should have been taught for generations. But what we have are government education systems, government-engineered education, to deny its citizens that we are the power, that we have the control. And the purpose for the creation of the government was to sustain the power of the people over government. Why would a government-engineered educational system ever teach that? Why would a government-engineered educational system ever teach that the people are more powerful than the government? They wouldn't. And this is why Madison warned us in 1792 that we cannot allow the central government to be in charge of our education. Because then the central government will decide what we are taught and what we are not taught. Right? Because they will be the sole decider of what the general welfare will be. They will be the sole arbiters of what is applicable and what is not. Because they will be, in their opinion, the most powerful over the people. And they will extend their jurisdiction everywhere. They will apply money everywhere. And once they apply money everywhere, then their opinion becomes law. And then we are no longer a people of law, but a people of opinion based on man's opinions. Opinion becomes law. And when opinion becomes law, that is despotism. But the crazy thing is this, Madison was telling us that this government, so out of control, would never be stopped by the people. Why? Because, as Samuel Adams warned, we will become universally ignorant. Knowledge will no longer be diffused. Opinion will be diffused. Opinion that supports the government's reign and the government's maintenance of power over the people. And then we will tamely surrender our liberties, because we will be universally ignorant of them, and we will sink under our own weight. That's why I tell you, ISIS is not our problem. Ignorance is our problem. Ignorance is why John Boehner is still a representative of the people. And as sick and sad as that sounds, that's what he is. He may not represent you and me, but his job is the representative of the people. And it's only because we've become universally ignorant that he remains so. It is because we are universally ignorant that John McCain is the Mitch McConnell, sorry, might as well be, right? Two men of the same cloth. Mitch McConnell is the representative of the states. How ludicrous is that? Well, that's what happens when people become universally ignorant. We have to go to the streets and protest the central government dictating curriculum to us when we become universally ignorant. We have to have $18 trillion in debt when the federal government is spending for things because we do not know what the tax and spend clause means, the general welfare clause, the necessary proper clause, or the commerce clause means, because we become universally ignorant. And we have transmuted the very nature of our Republican government, not the party. Right? A Republican government, a government of the people, a government where we are instituted among men, deriving its just power from the consent of the governed. Because we become universally ignorant, we consent to becoming a kingdom. That is why we must get educated. We must become vigilant. We must take back our power. We must resume control. And we must exercise our rights. Go to my website today. You can find all of what I've just taught you in writing. God bless.